We could call this meeting to order. This is the December 6, 2012 public meeting of the Air Resources Board, and I would ask you please to come to order. We will begin our meeting, as usual, with the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The clerk will please call the roll.
Dr. Balmes?
Here.
Ms. Berg?
Here.
Ms. Diadamo? Mr. De La Torre? Mayor Leverage? Mrs. Reardon? Supervisor Roberts? Dr. Sheriffs? Professor Sperling? Supervisor Yeager? Chairman Nichols?
Here.
Madam Chairman, we have a quorum.
Great, thank you. I want to say, I really like this room. And I'm wondering if the powers of eminent domain extend from the state to the regional level, and we couldn't just sort of adopt this place. I like being lower down than when we're in the Hagenschmidt room, you know, way up on our dais there. And the sound system is very good here, too, and so are the pictures. So I think we should consider that. We are very grateful to the Air Quality Management District for allowing us the use of their room this morning. I have a couple of announcements for anybody who's not familiar with our routine. Anyone who wishes to testify and has not signed up online should fill out a request to speak card. They're available in the lobby outside the boardroom, and we appreciate it if you turn into the clerk, who's back in the corner over there, in advance. If you've already taken advantage of the online sign-up procedure, you do not need to fill out a request to speak card, but you must check in with a clerk or your name will be removed from the speaker's list. Also, speakers should be aware that the board imposes a 3-minute time limit. We appreciate it if you state your first and last name when you come up to the podium and then summarize your testimony, putting it into your own words as opposed to reading it, because if you have prepared written testimony, we already have it. For safety reasons, please note the emergency exits that are in the rear and to the side here. We're required to evacuate this room immediately and go outside the building if there's an alert. Now, before we take up the calendar, the regular calendar, I wanted to mention a couple of things. First of all, in the wave of retirements that is going across the Air Resources Board and government in general, I should say, I want to take a moment to recognize the retirement of a longtime employee who is not with us today, and that's Dr. Linda Murchison. I believe Linda is listening on the broadcast. So if you are, Linda, this is for you. Linda is retiring after more than 35 years with the Air Resources Board. Throughout that time, she has been a leader in exemplifying ARB's commitment to strong technical analysis in policy development. Her dedication, as well as her noted management skills and creativity, have made her a key member of ARB's executive staff team. Linda directed the development of several major new ARB programs throughout her career. Let me just mention a couple that sort of illustrate the breadth of her contribution. Linda joined the Air Resources Board in 1982 and quickly moved into management. Early on, she transformed ARB's emissions inventory into a modern database system for the first time. She was the first manager of ARB's toxic inventory program, developing our first regulatory reporting requirements for airborne toxics. She also built ARB's first community assessment and environmental justice programs, including a neighborhood-scale air quality monitoring and modeling initiative. She was key to the drafting of our environmental justice policies and principles, and she oversaw the drafting of ARB's very much-used land use handbook. More recently, Linda has turned her talents to our climate change programs. Under her leadership, ARB staff developed California's first comprehensive greenhouse gas emissions inventory. And then just a year later, her staff developed and the board adopted the mandatory reporting rule and the verification program. While taking on these challenges, she also managed the very complex and important technical and policy issues involved in SIP planning. Underlying all of these accomplishments is Linda's unwavering dedication to the scientific and technical integrity of ARB work. We will miss her, but we can also be assured that she leaves behind a legacy of excellence, as well as some excellent people who she helped to train who will carry on. So, Linda, I hope you're listening. On behalf of myself and the board members and all ARB staff, we want to say thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes, yes.
I'd like to just say to Linda, and hope she is listening, how much I appreciated working with her over these many years that I've served on the board, particularly in the area of environmental justice and the land use, the famous land use handbook. She really was wonderful at working with community groups and in some more controversial areas. And I just appreciated the calming and reasoning effect of her efforts, and I thank her, and I'm sure we're going to miss her terribly.
Thank you very much. All right. The first item on this morning's calendar is a consent item. It's the public hearing to consider the approval of the San Diego 8-hour ozone SIP redesignation request and maintenance plan. And I'd like to ask the clerk if any witnesses have signed up to testify on this item. No, they have not. Okay. Thank you. Are there any board members who want to address this item or would like to have it removed from the consent calendar? If not, we have a motion to approve it.
I don't want to move it, but I would like to just take one moment just to say how refreshing it is that we're moving something into attainment and hate to have that go unnoticed.
I agree. I also wanted to introduce Bob Card. Bob, you're there. Bob is the Air Pollution Control Officer for San Diego, and since Supervisor Roberts isn't here, somebody has to make sure that we do the right thing. So, but you did not intend to address the board, I believe, right? Sure, come on forward. You might as well. This is a big day.
Chairman Nichols and board members, it's Bob Card, the Air Pollution Control Officer in San Diego. I just want to say thank you because this really is a joint effort. CARB's support has been of immense value, invaluable, I should say, just priceless in helping us get there. The San Diego Board of Supervisors, meaning the APCD Board, have also been great. They need credit for supporting what we do in even difficult economic times, as we're all aware of. And frankly, the staff at the APCD, and again, ARB staff, making this possible because it's great. 2012, we had no ozone exceedances whatsoever of the 1997 standard. As compared to every day in the summertime, we had an exceedance in 1990. It's tremendous progress. We've gone up from about 65 million vehicle miles per day in 1990 to 87 million a day now, or I should say in 2011. So this is tremendous progress, and it's a credit to everyone who's involved with it, and I want to thank you for that.
Thank you. That's great. All right, so we have a motion and a second. The record has been closed. All in favor, please say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Passes unanimously. Thank you. Okay. Our second item, excuse me, is also a consent item, agenda item 12-9-2, the public hearing to consider approval of the 2012 particulate matter 2.5 emissions inventory submittal to the state implementation plan for the San Francisco Bay Area. And I'd like to ask the clerk again if there's any witnesses who have signed up to testify on this item. Nope, there are not. Are there any board members who want to see this removed from the consent calendar? All right, if not, and there's no one here even representing the Bay Area, I see.
Move approval, Madam
fine.
Chair.
We have a motion to approve and a second. A second. All right, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Great. All right. Now, moving on to the next item, we have an informational update on the board's research program, and I'll ask our executive officer to introduce this item.
Thank you, Chairman Nichols. ARB's research program supports our public health and climate goals through a combination of extramural research, in-house studies, and collaboration with other agencies. The program benefits from the expertise of the University of California system and other world-class research institutions. ARB's research portfolio comprises studies involving a variety of scientific disciplines and approaches. Some of these studies are long-term and build on unique data sets, while others address specific knowledge gaps. Today, staff will present a brief retrospective on ARB's research program and some key findings. Staff selected three research areas to highlight today: children's health, diesel emissions, and greenhouse gases with high global warming potential. Dr. Sarah Patiglio of the Research Division will now give the presentation. Dr. Patiglio.
Thank you, Mr. Goldstein. Good morning, Chairman Nichols and members of the board. To improve our effort to communicate results, ARB's research program plans to provide periodic updates to the board on highlights from completed research studies. The goal of ARB's research program is to provide timely scientific information for efforts to adopt and attain health-based air quality standards, reduce community exposure to air toxics, and meet greenhouse gas reduction targets. To achieve these goals, ARB's research program has been and continues to be a collaborative effort with other agencies and top-tier research institutions. Over the past four decades, the research program has gotten twice the value over time through matched and leveraged funding. ARB participates in several research coordination groups with other California state agencies to ensure that its research portfolio is non-duplicative and to identify opportunities to leverage the state's resources. Information is shared at all stages of ARB's annual research planning process. The process benefits from ongoing discussions with experts from coordination groups, as well as with other institutions with scientific expertise or regulatory authority in air pollution and related fields. ARB's research program was established in 1971. Over the past 40 years, the program's research portfolio has been designed to meet ARB's evolving program needs in response to a broad range of legislative mandates. The results from this portfolio have provided vital information to determine how and when to implement regulations. This timeline illustrates when we initiated the investigation of some key research topics. Many of these topics continue to be important parts of the program. However, for this presentation, we will focus only on highlights from the topics of children's health, diesel emissions, and greenhouse gas mitigation. ARB's health effects research has helped contribute to the scientific basis for the development of state and national ambient air quality standards. The program also investigates emerging toxicological issues as they relate to public health, quantifies the health benefits of ARB's regulations, and conducts research to verify the effectiveness of those regulations. While there are many program needs covered by the health research program, today we will focus on children's health. Research on children's health began in 1992 with the Children's Health Study. This study investigated the health impacts of air pollution on California's vulnerable youth population. The study had a sample of 5,500 children who lived in 12 communities in Southern California that had different levels of air pollution. This work was initiated under ARB funding to follow these children from 4th to 12th grade. The study is still ongoing, currently funded by the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences. This groundbreaking study added significantly to what is known about the impact of air pollution exposure on the respiratory health of children and is highly cited as one of the most significant research efforts undertaken in the field. Among the policy outcomes of this work was SB 25, the Children's Environmental Health Protection Act, legislation requiring California to reassess its air quality standards to ensure the health of infants and children. Major findings from the Children's Health Study include evidence from persistent reductions in lung growth from air pollution exposure, evidence that the risk of asthma-related symptoms increased near roadways, and linked air pollution to both the onset and severity of asthma. These findings set the stage for subsequent studies which it confirmed and expanded on these results. These studies included quantifying exposures to air pollutants in ambient air at the neighborhood level, near roadways, and in a variety of enclosed environments, including homes, schools, and vehicles. Findings included confirmation that in-vehicle exposure, such as school buses, was high and linked to asthma onset, and linked asthma onset to exposure. Current research focuses on mitigation options such as filtration in vehicles, homes, and schools. ARB-sponsored research found that children living in communities with the highest levels of air pollution are more likely to have significantly reduced lung function growth compared to those with lower exposure. The investigators also found that children who relocated from high to low PM community showed improved lung function, although it is unclear whether the improvement in growth was sufficient to compensate for the adverse effects of previous exposures. The converse was also true, that children who relocated from low to high PM communities showed reduced lung function. In addition, based on findings from the Children's Health Study, we calculated in 2005 that an additional 1.7 million school absences were linked to ozone exposure and would be avoided if the current state ozone standard was attained. The Children's Health Study found that lung function was reduced in children living closest to freeways. This finding led to subsequent ARB-funded research on the health impacts of exposure to traffic emissions. Studies show that even in areas with good regional air quality, proximity to traffic is associated with adverse respiratory health effects in children. These findings help to support the reviews of our ambient air quality standards and inform our regulations and guidelines, such as ARB's Land Use Handbook. Two ARB studies of vehicle-related pollutants in school buses identified the intrusion of a bus's own exhaust emissions into the passenger cabin as a significant source of exposure. The results supported ARB's lower emissions school bus program to replace older, dirtier buses. The results also supported ARB's air toxic control measure that limits school bus idling. These research findings led ARB to put a research project into place last year to investigate the effectiveness of filters in reducing pollution exposures in school buses and cars. Research from the Children's Health Study showed an association between exposure to ozone and the initiation of new asthma cases. Associations between traffic pollution and wheezing, asthma prevalence, and increased asthma medication use were also found. Studies that followed found that exposure to traffic-related pollutants are also linked to asthma initiation. Results from the Fresno Asthmatic Children's Environment Study showed a worsening of the children's symptoms with increased exposure to polyaromatic hydrocarbons, which are likely the result of traffic sources. The research program is currently following up with mitigation studies that examine the effectiveness of filtration in reducing particulate matter exposures in the homes of asthmatic children. Results from these projects are expected in 2016. The next portion of the presentation will focus on the research program's efforts to reduce diesel emissions. The research program has funded extensive studies to quantify vehicle emission rates and sources, test control technologies, and monitor the long-term impact of regulations for both light and heavy-duty vehicles. For today's presentation, we will focus only on emissions from heavy-duty vehicles. In this slide, we show the main components of ARB's regulatory program over the past 15 years to reduce emissions from trucks, starting in 1998 when diesel PM was designated a toxic air contaminant. ARB responded by developing and adopting the Diesel Risk Reduction Plan in the year 2000. With the goal of reducing diesel PM emissions by 85% by 2020. Subsequent rules to reduce PM emission from diesel started with a series of fleet rules in the 2000s that reduced emissions from captive fleets. Two new emission standards were also passed to reduce PM and NOx, starting with the 2007 and 2010 model year engines, respectively. These rules by themselves, however, were not enough to achieve the goals laid out by the Diesel Risk Reduction Plan, nor to meet national ambient air quality standards for PM and ozone. Because diesel engines are very long-lasting, rules were needed to require retrofits or vehicle turnover of practically every diesel truck in the state over the next decade. The drayage rule has already cleaned up diesel trucks around the major ports in California, while the truck and bus rule will reduce PM and NOx as needed over the next decade. Here we show the main components of ARD's diesel research over the last decade. The program was designed to inform and verify the effectiveness of the regulatory program and has played an important role in the success of the diesel rules. Beginning in 2000, a multi-agency collaboration led by ARB measured tailpipe emissions from diesel and compressed natural gas-fueled transit buses with different types of aftertreatment and under a range of operating conditions. Continued collaboration with our partners led to a major effort to characterize the effectiveness of retrofitting aftertreatment technologies on existing vehicles. Our current efforts are focused on measuring the real-world effect of our major in-use diesel rules, such as the truck and bus rule, using biological and chemical assays to screen exhaust for overall toxicity, characterizing the effects of new fuels and technologies, and on achieving further NOx reductions. Much of our research is done in-house and in collaboration with the divisions that operate our emissions testing laboratories. In these laboratories, heavy-duty trucks are placed on dynamometers where their exhaust is collected on filters for subsequent analysis. As an example of the effectiveness of diesel particulate filters, also known as DPFs, this slide shows a filter sample collected from a diesel without a DPF on the left and with a DPF on the right. Once all diesel engines in the state have these filters, seeing a diesel truck emitting black smoke, such as the truck on the left, will be a thing of the past. Here we show the reductions the program has observed with our laboratory studies for NOx, PM, and total hydrocarbon emissions. The comparison is made between 1998 model year trucks and trucks that meet the 2010 standards. The research division has also identified a suite of biological and chemical assays that, in aggregate, provide an important screening for toxicity. These assays measure markers that can be related to the ability of the exhaust, or PM, to cause oxidative stress, inflammation, or DNA damage. By consistently using the same assays in the same manner, this toxicity screening can be used to compare the exhaust from different types of vehicles, fuels, and aftertreatment technologies. The drastic reductions provided a significant indication that new technology is resulting in emissions that are less harmful on a per-mile basis. These types of tests are also important in ensuring that there are no unintended consequences of the new technology. In addition to measuring emissions in our in-house laboratories, ARB has several projects underway to understand emissions as they occur on California's roadways. Shown here is the mobile monitoring platform we developed. It's an electric vehicle equipped with instrumentation to measure key gaseous and particle species with high spatial and time resolution. The platform is being used on major freeways in Los Angeles to measure the emission factor of vehicles traveling on those major roadways. The map on the right shows the mobile platform's path along the 710 freeway, which is a route that is heavily used by drayage trucks. Using the mobile monitoring platform on the 710 freeway, we were able to quantify the immediate benefits of the drayage truck rule. The stepwise reduction is due to a number of factors in addition to the drayage rule, including the gradual turnover of trucks from fleet rules and fluctuations in the economy. Although NOx was not a target of the drayage rule, this slide shows the co-benefit of the rule in reducing NOx emissions in just 16 months. Similarly, black carbon emissions on this drayage truck route have been reduced by 70% over the last several years as the drayage rule has been implemented. Similar work by UC Berkeley has shown reductions near the Port of Oakland. These significant reductions in diesel-related pollutants in heavily impacted communities, which include the neighborhoods adjacent to the ports in California, will hopefully reduce the prevalence of health-related impacts due to exposure of emissions. In addition to measuring the fleet-wide average emission over time, measurements of individual trucks are also needed. Seen in this video, a heavy-duty truck drives through a truck test tent at a weigh station. A perforated tube in the corner of the tent draws in a sample of the emissions, which allows the investigator to calculate an emission factor. Thousands of trucks can be tested at a weigh station in a relatively short time in this manner. With biannual measurements planned, we will be able to assess the durability, failure rates, and degradation rates of the major aftertreatment technologies used in diesel engines over time. The board will be asked to fund a similar study in the next presentation. We'll now turn to ARB's climate change research, which began with an estimation of the effects of climate change on public health and the economy and has helped identify cap and trade options. The research program has expanded its climate research to include sources and potential mitigation strategies for greenhouse gases. These research efforts have led directly to some of the regulations and programs now in place to meet the 2020 greenhouse gas emission goals of AB 32. Here we provide the highlights from the program's efforts to inventory and reduce non-CO2 greenhouse gases, which is a growing fraction of California's carbon footprint. The greenhouse gas inventory includes all atmospheric constituents that trap heat in the atmosphere. Non-CO2 gases include high global warming potential gases, black carbon, methane, and nitrous oxide. These gases account for 25% of California's greenhouse gas inventory. The research program's focus on non-CO2 gases aims to explore potential new emission reduction strategies, ways to improve emission estimates, and methods to verify emission reductions over time. Over the past 5 years, ARB has inventoried California's sources of high global warming potential gases. The inventory demonstrated that emissions of these gases are growing rapidly in California and are produced from a variety of sources. Several research projects highlighted the importance and cost-effectiveness of reducing these emissions and led directly to the adoption of the rules to reduce hydrofluorocarbons from commercial refrigeration, motor vehicle air conditioning systems, and other sources. These rules are expected to reduce annual statewide greenhouse gas emissions by 8 million metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalent by 2020 at relatively low costs, and in many cases, cost savings to industry. Finally, based on this research, ARB adopted a protocol to provide incentives to recover and destroy ozone-depleting substances as part of the cap-and-trade program. ARB research on black carbon began with the creation of a California inventory. Another ARB research study has observed a 50% reduction in black carbon measured at monitoring sites throughout California over the past 20 years. This agrees with the expected emissions reductions associated with California's diesel emission control program. Further reductions will likely be shown in the future due to ARB's advanced clean car program and district burning restrictions. The 50% reduction in black carbon accounted for a 25% decrease in atmospheric heating in California. Through a research collaboration with NOAA, we were able to produce direct measurements of this forcing in the atmosphere. The Tower Network represents one of our current research efforts to improve ARB's emission inventories for methane and nitrous oxide. Each yellow pin you see in the video represents a measurement site. The sites were established in coordination with NOAA and the Energy Commission. The objective of the network are to improve air quality models, refine emission inventories, determine the effectiveness of new emission control technologies, and improve measurement methods. We have now zoomed into Mount Wilson Observatory, which is a measuring site that is one of the first sites in the network. Monitoring of methane at Mount Wilson began in 2007. Measurements from the site helped develop a methane inventory for Los Angeles, which led to several peer-reviewed publications. The success at Mount Wilson led to the adoption of a statewide network. The monitoring at Mount Wilson is one of several methods currently being employed to understand sources of methane in the Los Angeles Basin. We have also deployed two mobile monitoring platforms to better understand local sources of methane. In collaboration with Scripps and NOAA, aerial passes over the LA Basin have also increased our understanding of emissions and atmospheric processes in the area. Beginning in 2012, ARB intends to use its research tools to complement a 5-year federally funded greenhouse gas monitoring project to investigate the sources and trends of carbon dioxide and methane emissions in Los Angeles. The Los Angeles Basin represents an urban setting and has distinct sources of emissions, such as natural gas pipelines and landfills. This contrasts with other parts of California, such as the rural areas that are common in the Central Valley. In rural areas, methane emissions are dominated by agricultural sources. To help define emissions in rural areas, another tower in our network is located in Walnut Grove, which is approximately 30 miles south of Sacramento. Similar to our study in the LA Basin, we have developed another holistic research effort to determine methane and nitrous oxide sources in a rural setting. We have installed a suite of instruments on a radio tower in Walnut Grove, which is currently collecting measurements of methane and nitrous oxide. We have leveraged a significant amount of funding through collaborations with the California Department of Food and Agriculture, CalRecycle, and the California Energy Commission to determine nitrous oxide emissions from the application of fertilizer to a wide variety of economically important crops. The mobile monitoring platform is being used to understand specific local sources in the area. Flights have also been conducted through the CalNEX project. The flight pattern in the upper left corner of the slide was used over rice fields, which are a significant source of methane. Today's presentation provided a few examples of how ARB's research projects work together to create a sophisticated research portfolio. Communicating these research results to the public has become a top priority. Links to outreach materials are available on the ARB research website and announced on the ARB research listserv. These types of communication tools are necessary since the program produces many final reports each year. Projects from this year's annual research plan will be outlined in the next presentation. These projects will continue to build upon the strong research foundation that we have created over the past four decades. Thank you for your attention. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Well, thank you. That's a really good selection of a couple of key areas of our research, and I welcome any comments or questions from members of the board. Dr. Bollins, would you like to begin?
Well, first off, I want to congratulate staff for embarking on this new effort to communicate both to the board and to the public about our research, which has been phenomenal for years. But I don't think we've done the best job of communicating that to the public at large. I think the scientific community has always recognized the quality of CARB's research. So I thought this was a really excellent presentation, and I look forward to more of these, I think, on a quarterly basis or something, semi-annual, whatever, an appropriate interval. And but we have much more to do with regard to the public at large, but I think this is a good first step.
Great, thank you. I want to particularly point to the work that's done on diesel, because that's been so controversial, to say that, you know, I think it's really impressive that we're not just looking at the harmful effects of diesel, but we're actually assessing on a continuing basis the effects of our work, so that we can claim credit for the things that we've done that are good, but also see the things that may not be working and use that on a continuous feedback basis to really improve the program. I think that's the mark of a really successful program, and one that's well integrated into the policy side of the organization. Any other comments or questions? If not, we have some research proposals to consider, and this will be a good backdrop for that. Mr. Goldstein, will you please introduce this item?
Thank you, Chairman Nichols. The research to be covered by the proposals before you today support ARB's regulatory priorities in three key areas: foundational science, clean air strategies, and program effectiveness. Specifically, these projects include air quality and climate studies that will improve air quality models used for state implementation planning and inform the development of future strategies to meet California's climate and air quality goals. They'll support successful implementation of the Sustainable Communities Program and the Advanced Clean Cars Regulation, and will investigate the technical potential and economic feasibility of further emission reductions from freight transport. They will also examine the effectiveness of ARB's existing programs to reduce emissions from the light and heavy-duty vehicle fleets. These research projects were presented to you last June as concepts and have now been developed into full proposals. They've been reviewed by the Research Screening Committee, as well as reviewers at other state agencies and funding organizations, to promote coordination and avoid duplication. With that, Dr. Annalisa Schiller of the Research Division will describe the research studies. Dr. Schiller.
Thank you, Mr. Goldstein. Good morning, Chairman Nichols and members of the board. This morning, we will be presenting nine research proposals for your consideration, which were developed in response to the 2012-2013 research plan that the board approved last June. All of these proposals have been reviewed by ARB's Research Screening Committee and have been recommended for funding. Staff have also coordinated with other funding agencies, including air districts, the California Energy and Public Utilities Commissions, the Bureau of Automotive Repair, Caltrans, the US EPA and Department of Energy, and other states, to avoid duplication and to identify co-funding opportunities wherever possible. The 9 research proposals we are presenting today are designed to support the board's efforts to attain air quality standards and meet climate goals. The majority of these new projects focus on transportation-related research needs. In spite of substantial improvements in California's air quality over the past few decades, ozone and PM2.5 levels continue to exceed health-based air quality standards in both urban and downwind rural areas of California. ARB has numerous studies and collaborations to address key air quality research questions and will continue to fund research to support state implementation plans. In the research update, you just heard about the history of ARB's diesel program and the role that research played. Diesel emissions from heavy-duty vehicles and freight transport are major sources of criteria and toxic air pollutants and greenhouse gas emissions in California. To meet long-term air quality and climate goals, emissions from these sectors will need to be significantly reduced beyond what is expected from already adopted regulations. Research will continue to examine new opportunities to further reduce emissions and will evaluate the effectiveness of ARB's existing diesel programs. Passenger travel is also a major source of criteria in toxic air pollutants and greenhouse gas emissions in California, and emissions from these vehicles will need to be significantly reduced to meet long-term air quality and climate goals. Research projects proposed this year will support implementation of the Advanced Clean Cars program that the board adopted in January and evaluate the long-term benefits of the board's prior efforts to reduce passenger vehicle emissions through the Low Emission Vehicle Program. Achieving California's 2050 climate goal will require dramatic changes in transportation, land use, and community design. Research in this area will seek to improve land use and transportation strategies, support the development of communities' plans to meet SB 375 goals, and explore the linkages between air pollution exposure and compact development. These research projects will strengthen the scientific foundation that underpins air quality planning, support strategies to reduce emissions from the light and heavy-duty fleets and from freight transport, and provide insights into the real-world outcomes of sustainable communities strategies. This first proposed project will update the photochemical air quality models that ARB uses to develop state implementation plans to reflect the most up-to-date understanding of atmospheric chemistry. In order to predict the impact of air pollution control strategies, these models must represent ozone and PM formation as accurately as possible. These models are updated regularly to ensure that they remain state of the science. This research will improve predictions of the formation of ozone and the secondary organic carbon fraction of PM2.5 and will assess the impact of nitrogen and carbon chemistry on the formation of secondary PM. These improvements will ensure that ARB's regulatory efforts continue to be based on the most credible air quality models. The remaining proposals we will be presenting are transportation related. The first of these projects will study diesel emissions from heavy-duty vehicles. This project will measure emissions from trucks traveling through the Caldecott Tunnel in the San Francisco Bay Area in 2014, 2015, and 2017. Corresponding to key implementation milestones for the truck and bus rule, and will assess the effectiveness and durability of exhaust aftertreatment technologies over time. This study will complement related research examining heavy-duty trucks in the Los Angeles basin in order to characterize the statewide emissions from the heavy-duty truck fleet and to improve emissions forecasts. Results will be used to quantify the actual air quality benefits of the truck and bus rule. The next 4 research projects will examine passenger vehicle emissions. The first 3 projects will support the Advanced Clean Cars program, which is being implemented in close collaboration with the US EPA and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. These projects will help ARB staff address concerns raised by stakeholders related to consumer acceptance, vehicle usage, and emissions measurement from the very clean vehicles that are anticipated in response to the program. The 4th project will quantify the benefits of the board's prior efforts to reduce emissions from passenger cars through the Low Emission Vehicle Program. This first Advanced Clean Cars project will produce a statistically robust representation of the new car buying population in California and other partner states who may adopt California's rules in order to identify the factors that influence new vehicle purchase decisions. The study will survey and interview the diverse population of new car buyers to provide ARB with insights into the potential for policies, incentives, and outreach to remove obstacles or enhance motivations for the adoption of zero and near zero emission vehicles. The South Coast Air Quality Management District and other states are interested in administering the same survey and conducting similar interviews, and staff has identified at least $325,000 in likely co-funding to expand the projects to more households as a result of these partnerships. The next project will study the actual emissions benefits associated with transitioning to more electrified vehicles, accounting for the variability that results from individual consumer usage and charging behavior. This research topic was discussed at the board's January meeting for the Advanced Clean Cars program. Plug-in electric vehicles are expected to account for an increasingly large share of new light-duty vehicle sales in compliance with ARB's Advanced Clean Cars program and the governor's executive order on zero-emission vehicles. The proposed project will collect detailed in-use vehicle data to quantify the share of miles driven with grid-based electricity. Unlike previous research, this study will evaluate an entire household's travel to determine, for example, whether households shift miles to electric vehicles for shorter trips. Results will improve emissions estimates of various electric vehicle types, as well as the overall light-duty fleet. This project will also assess the charging behavior of plug-in electric vehicle drivers in order to understand possible grid impacts from vehicle charging and the need for public charging infrastructure, and is being closely coordinated with the California Energy and Public Utilities Commissions and the U.S. EPA and Department of Energy. This next proposed project will address the measurement challenges presented by the Advanced Clean Cars Particulate Matter Standards. At the board's meeting in January, the board requested that staff study whether PM could be reliably measured at such low levels. This project will augment a proposed coordinating research council project investigating possible improvements to PM measurements. ARB's funding contribution will ensure that researchers evaluate methods for measuring at the 1 milligram per mile level required by California's new standards. The last proposed light-duty project will quantify the benefits of ARB's low-emission vehicle program. As older vehicles begin to exit the fleet in significant numbers, emissions from the light-duty fleet need to be monitored to assess emissions reductions over time. The proposed study will employ remote sensing devices to measure emissions from passenger cars at the La Brea Boulevard on-ramp to Interstate 10 in Los Angeles in 2013 and 2015. This study will build upon prior measurements from the same location, which began characterizing passenger car emissions in 1999, in order to allow ongoing analysis of emissions trends. This project will evaluate the durability of emission reduction technologies and characterize the relative importance of high emitters to fleet average emissions, and will also explore a potential new technique to identify gross evaporative emitters. This project is being conducted in coordination with the South Coast Air Quality Management District and the Bureau of Automotive Repair, and results will improve ARB's emission inventory and quantify the benefits of the LEV program. Finally, three proposed research projects will investigate the air quality, climate, and health impacts of sustainable communities strategies. The first proposed project in this research area will examine traffic management approaches and urban designs with the goal of identifying specific strategies that minimize air pollution exposures in heavily traveled urban corridors. As California pursues increasingly compact development to reduce vehicle travel demand, the air pollution exposures of people living and walking in these areas may increase. In order to ensure that SB 375 implementation is balanced with the need to protect public health, land use and transportation planning must incorporate estimates of air pollution exposure. This study will modify the existing operational street pollution model, a model widely used in Europe to characterize street-level air pollution dispersion, to more accurately simulate the low-rise and widely spaced urban landscapes that are typical of California. This project will also employ ARB's mobile monitoring platform to capture micro-scale street-level emissions and meteorological data in multiple Los Angeles street environments. This data will be used both to validate the model and to quantify the exposure impacts of different traffic management strategies and community designs. Results will assist California planners in designing and managing communities to minimize air pollution exposure. The next proposed project will assess changes in travel mode for households living in the vicinity of a new light rail line in Los Angeles. Many communities are working to improve citizens' access to transit as part of their SB 375 planning. In Los Angeles alone, there are 6 light rail projects currently planned, and a number of other regions are also planning or considering them. This project will collect travel mode choice data from the same households as those evaluated in a study that assessed the travel modes of approximately 250 households before the line was opened. The pre-light rail study was partially funded by the UC Sustainable Transportation Program. Results of this research will help local governments and planning agencies better account for reductions in vehicle miles traveled and changes in other transportation mode choices related to the construction of light rail infrastructure and to prioritize SB 375 strategies accordingly. These findings will also allow ARB to assess the actual emission benefits of SB 375 strategies.
Could I just interrupt with a question because it came up during a meeting that we had earlier this week with a representative of UC Irvine. We were talking about some efforts that they've been making to try to get light rail to bring people to and from a campus. We use the word Los Angeles loosely. Those of you from Sacramento tend to think of anything, you know, south of Santa Barbara as being Los Angeles, unless maybe it's San Diego. But I just want to make sure that this study isn't only looking literally at Los Angeles city or county, but is focused on the region as a whole. Because SB 375 covers, I mean, the sustainability plan covers the whole metro area. Does anybody know the answer to that question?
It's only looking at one specific light rail line in this case, and then the Expo line.
It's just the Expo line.
Right.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right, because they're, I can't imagine that they're all the same, but maybe this is a, can be used as a basis for other studies.
I think the goal is to look in part about the behavioral aspects of a before and after and mode shifts, so certainly in concept, the results could be usable elsewhere.
Okay. Right. No, I understand the value that we, and that's the controversial area, so it's good to have the data. Okay, thank you.
Okay, then the last proposed project will examine the measured emissions benefits of cool pavements. Pavement materials that absorb less of the sun's energy reduce urban heat islands, slow smog formation, reduce building energy use, and cool the Earth's atmosphere. If cool pavements were used widely throughout the state, they could reflect enough sun to offset the equivalent of at least 2 million metric tons of CO2 and would have significant air quality benefits. This study will leverage and expand upon ongoing research on cool surfaces. ARB is currently co-funding a cool pavement demonstration project with the California Energy Commission and the U.S. Department of Energy, and has funded related work to assess the reflectance of cool roofs, which are much better understood than cool pavements. The project will measure emissions of air pollutants from both cool and conventional pavement materials commonly used in California, and will conduct greenhouse gas life cycle assessment for cool pavements. This project will be co-funded by Caltrans and will support the recently signed bill AB 296, requiring Caltrans and Cal-EPA to work together to study cool pavement technologies. Results will inform the development of regionally appropriate guidelines for use of cool pavements and provide ARB insight into the actual climate and air quality benefits of these materials. The projects we have presented to you today benefit from nearly $1 million in co-funding and funding for prior supporting research. They also reflect ongoing coordination with federal agencies and other funding organizations and will leverage multi-million dollar funding commitments from NASA, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, the US EPA, and the Coordinating Research Council for research that will directly support ARB's research needs. As noted in the research update that you just heard, staff have also been working hard to improve research coordination among state agencies and are involved in a number of research coordination efforts to ensure that ARB funds are spent prudently and strategically. We recommend that the board approve these 9 proposals, all of which support priority board programs and decision-making. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions or comments about any of the studies? Yes, John.
Well, not about any specific study, but a general comment, if I might.
Sure, of course.
Well, again, I want to compliment staff. There, as some of you know, Chair Nichols appointed a subcommittee of the board, Dr. Sperling, Dr. Sheriffs, and myself, to look at the research portfolio and strategic plan for the agency. And one of the things we came up with was to try to focus the research on the sort of immediate and short-term as well as long-term needs of the agency with regard to regulatory initiatives. And I want to compliment staff. I think that this portfolio of research proposals hits the mark well in that regard. I'm sure Dr. Sperling would say the same thing.
Good.
Since many of the research proposals were in his area.
Yes. Well, I figured he probably had at least some opportunity to review them before we came here today. I'm seeing head nodding out there. So, good. Okay. Anything else anybody would like to add? I think we can vote on these as a group then, rather than having to go through them one by one. So, I would request a resolution.
Madam Chair, I will move to move the nine research
proposals. Okay, I don't think we have to read the numbers. They're sequential anyway.
Yes, they're sequential.
Right.
As and John, Ron will second.
Okay, all right. Without further ado, then, I don't think we need to have a single vote. We can just vote by voice. So all in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, great. Congratulations, and thank you very much. Appreciate it. All right. Our next agenda item this morning is an update on AB 32, and we have some, obviously, we've had some important milestones since the board last met. We want to wrap up 2012 and look ahead to what we're going to be seeing in 2013, and this is a good opportunity to do it. Since its passage in 2006, as I think the world now knows, California has made great strides in implementing our global climate law. Many of the measures and the programs that were identified in the original climate change scoping plan have been adopted over the last 5 years. Implementation has begun for many of those, and we're getting reductions now that are putting us on track for meeting the 2020 greenhouse gas goals set by the legislation. For example, the state has occupied a cap and trade, has adopted a cap and trade regulation, which will provide a limit on over 85% of the state's greenhouse gases. And the first auction for this program was successfully conducted last month. In addition, cooperation and coordination among our sister agencies is at an all-time high, which is also helping us to get to the 2020 goal, particularly with respect to the electricity sector, and will serve us well as we tackle the longer-term greenhouse gas reduction goals for 2050. Mr. Goldstein, you'll please introduce this item, and I know there's a report here as well.
Thank you, Chairman Nichols. Today, staff will provide an update on activities related to the cap and trade program, the update to the climate change scoping plan, and AB 32 related items we plan to bring to the board for your consideration next year. As you know, the first cap and trade auction was successfully conducted last month, and staff will discuss the results of the auction and the next milestones. In addition, staff will describe our proposed approach to updating the state's climate change scoping plan, which was first approved by the board in 2008. That landmark plan stimulated a long list of successful state and local initiatives, including several ARB measures such as the Low Carbon Fuel Standard and Advanced Clean Cars. AB 32 requires that the scoping plan be updated at least every 5 years. The 2013 update will define our climate priorities for the next 5 years to lay the groundwork to reach post-2020 goals. We plan to bring an updated scoping plan to the board for your consideration next fall. Finally, we'll highlight the upcoming AB 32 related items that the board will consider in 2013. With that, I'll ask Marcel Surovic of the Stationary Source Division to begin her presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Goldstein. Good morning, Madam Chairman and members of the Board. Today, I will provide you with an update on AB 32-related activity. My presentation today will address activities related to the cap and trade program, the update to the climate change scoping plan, and AB 32-related items we plan to present for your consideration in 2013. I'll begin with an update on cap and trade-related activities. The first auction for the cap and trade program was held on November 14th. This slide summarizes the results. As can be seen in the slide, all of the 2013 vintage allowances were sold at $10.09. Over 5.5 million, or roughly 14% of the advanced 2015 allowances, were sold at the $10 floor price. At 10 o'clock this morning, ARB released additional statistics about the auction. These statistics are based on qualified bids, or just those bids used to calculate the settlement price after the bids have been evaluated against the holding limit, the purchase limit, and the bid guarantees, instead of all the submitted bids. The most prominent difference between the statistics based on qualified and submitted bids is the ratio of total bids to the total 2013 allowances available for sale. It is lower when only qualified bids are considered. For the November 14th auction, a very small number of auction participants exceeded their purchase limit, holding limit, or bid guarantee, which led to a higher ratio for submitted bids. Before the executive officer certified the auction, ARB staff and the market monitor carefully evaluated all the bids and determined that the auction process complied with the regulatory requirements. These bids did not affect the final results of the auction settlement. Next slide. There were 73 entities approved to participate in the auction. The auction platform performed as designed with no problems detected. Auction results were released on November 19th, 5 days after the auction was held. The financial settlements from participating entities for allocation purchases were due by November 30th. The allowances will be transferred into entities' accounts tomorrow. Staff released the auction reserve price for 2013 on December 3rd. Allowances cannot be sold for bid prices below the reserve floor price. The quarterly auction reserve price for the November 2012 auction was $10. This price will increase for auctions in 2013 by 5% plus the rate of inflation, as specified in the cap and trade regulation, to $10.71. The next quarterly auction of GHG allowances will be announced by December 21st and will take place on February 19th of next year. Starting January 1st of next year, greenhouse gas emissions from covered entities will count towards their compliance obligation. Covered entities will need to turn in allowances and offsets for 30% of their 2013 emissions in November 2014. And finally, the first quarterly allowance price containment reserve sale will be held on March 8th. These sales offer allowances at fixed prices to serve as a cost containment mechanism and are only open to covered entities. The state proceeds from the auctions will be invested as mandated by Assembly Bill 1532 and Senate Bill 535 and will be allocated through the state's budget process. Department of Finance, or DOF, must develop a three-year investment plan in consultation with ARB and submit the plan to the legislature. ARB must hold public workshops in different regions of the state and a board hearing on the investment plan before it is submitted to the legislature. The funds generated from the auctions must facilitate the achievement of reductions of greenhouse gas emissions in the state. 25% of the available funds must be allocated to projects that provide benefits to disadvantaged communities, and 10% of the funds must be spent in these communities. Finally, the California Public Utility Commission, or CPUC, must determine how the proceeds from the sale of the state's investor-owned utilities allowances are used. CPUC released a proposed decision on use of utility proceeds in November, which is expected to be voted on by the end of the year. Now I will discuss the 2013 update to the climate change scoping plan. First, some background on the initial scoping plan. AB 32 required the ARB to develop and approve a scoping plan that describes the approach California will take to meet the 2020 greenhouse gas emissions limit set forth in the law. The scoping plan was first approved by the board in 2008 and must be updated every 5 years. Consequently, staff plans to present an updated scoping plan for your consideration in the fall of 2013. The following slides will discuss staff's approach to updating the scoping plan and various elements we envision in the update. The objective of the 2013 update to the scoping plan are to highlight the state's progress towards meeting the 2020 GHG emission reduction goals set forth in AB 32, begin the transition for the state to meet the post-2020 goals set forth in executive orders, provide a high-level view of how the state can develop a long-term strategy for reducing GHG emissions beyond 2020, and define the state's climate priorities for the next 5 years. To address the state's near-term and longer-term GHG goals, the update will have both a 2020 and a post-2020 element. The 2020 element will focus on state, regional, and local initiatives that are being implemented now to assist us in meeting the 2020 goal. Numerous measures and programs identified in the 2008 scoping plan have been successfully put in place and are well on their way to achieving full implementation by 2020. The scoping plan update will provide a status report of these programs, and where applicable, staff will present revised projected 2020 emission reductions for them. We will also include an analysis and discussion of co-benefits of these measures, including reductions in criteria pollutants and air toxics, green jobs, and the development of green technologies and renewable power. The update will also include a discussion of local and regional initiatives that are underway, such as those addressing land use and transportation planning, that will assist the state in meeting its GHG emission reduction goal. Finally, the 2020 element of the update will include a discussion on the latest climate science, including recent understanding of short-lived climate pollutants and brown carbon. The post-2020 element will provide a high-level view of a long-term strategy for meeting the 2050 GHG goals. These goals include Governor Brown's goal for the transportation sector as set forth in his executive order signed last year. This order sets a 2050 goal of GHG emissions that are 80% less than the 1990 level for this sector. Staff plans to set a midpoint GHG emission reduction goal somewhere around the 2032 timeframe to align with the goals in the local air districts, state implementation plans, and the regional transportation plans. The post-2020 element will assume the continuation of GHG reduction regulatory programs that have been adopted and fully implemented by 2020 and will build on those regulatory programs, developing a process and specific recommendations for moving forward on a long-term GHG reduction strategy for the state, including necessary federal, state, and local policies, research priorities, and changes to infrastructure. The update will emphasize the integration of statewide policies. A number of statewide planning tools, policies, and reports have or are in the process of being developed that will assist California in transitioning to our longer-term GHG emission reduction goals, as well as adapting to climate change impacts that may occur in the state. These tools include the Governor's Environmental Goals and Policies Report, which is expected to be released next year, ARB's Vision for Clean Air Report, which takes a coordinated look at strategies to meet California's longer-term air quality and climate change goals, the State Implementation Plan, the Sustainable Community Strategies by the Regional Transportation Planning Agencies, ARB efforts in developing a sustainable freight strategy, California Energy Commission's Integrated Energy Policy Report, Natural Resources Climate Change Adaptation Strategy, and a number of other reports released by other agencies, such as Department of Water Resources Climate Action Plan and Caltrans Blueprint Report. We plan to focus on the five key topics where competing policy needs may need to be resolved. These areas include the transportation sector, specifically fuels, infrastructure, and land use, the energy sector, including generation, transmission, and efficiency, the waste sector, the water sector, and the agriculture sector. STEP also envisions a regional overlay element to complement the development of the scoping plan update. The purpose of the regional approach is to focus on local issues and concerns such as transportation, infrastructure, and land use that are area specific. The regional outreach efforts will focus on Northern, Central, and Southern California. They will occur through public forums that will have regional co-hosts. We expect opportunities for local leaders in these areas to take on key roles in formulating approaches to address these issues. Staff plans to hold initial public workshops early next year to discuss concepts for updating the scoping plan. Public forums hosted by regional and local entities will be held in targeted regions in the state. In addition, staff will be consulting with the Environmental Justice Advisory Committee as we develop the update to the scoping plan. Staff expects to release a preliminary draft of the updated scoping plan report for public review in the summer of 2013 and present a final version to the board for approval next fall. I will conclude my presentation with a highlight of upcoming AB 32 related items that the board will consider in 2013. These items will include regulatory amendments, new measures, and informational items addressing cap and trade, fuels, sustainable freight, and incentives. In 2013, we plan to address linkage with Quebec and to present amendments to the cap and trade regulation to address board direction given to staff in September, address potential changes to allocation, and to propose new offset protocols. Two offset project types currently under review are the destruction of fugitive coal mine methane and the reduction in methane due to changes in rice cultivation. In addition, we continue to make progress on the adaptive management plan for the cap and trade regulation. We are working on methods to assess potential localized air quality impacts from the regulation. We are also undertaking efforts to address potential forest impacts from the compliance offset protocol and are expecting that recommendations for a monitoring system will be provided to ARV in September 2013. We expect to have public working group meetings on both parts of adaptive management in early 2013. The board will see a number of fuel-related items next year. We plan to propose new biodiesel and renewable diesel fuel specifications, as well as amendments to the low-carbon fuel standard. In addition, we plan to present amendments to the E85 fuel specifications and the engine certification fuel at the end of next year. Also, an executive officer hearing will be held next spring to add fuel pathways and crude oil carbon intensities to the low-carbon fuel standard. Staff's sustainable freight efforts will be in full gear next year, and staff plans to report to the board next summer on our progress in this area. And finally, we plan to present the investment plan for the cap and trade auction proceeds to the board in the spring. Additional incentive funding for building efficiency programs will be available to the state from the passage last month of Proposition 39, which provides funding for clean energy projects. Coordinating these two incentive programs with funds from AB 118, the Electric Program Investment Charge Program, and other sources will allow the state to maximize its future GHG reduction opportunities. This concludes my presentation. I would be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. I'm expecting that we'll have a considerable discussion, but before we do have two people who signed up to speak to us, so why don't we take them first, Paul Shepherd and Brian Beering, both from Wildflower Energy.
Good morning. My name is Paul Shepherd. I'm the Director of Asset Management for Wildflower Energy, and I'm here today to comment on the pre-AB 32 contract issue. Wildflower is the owner of two peaking facilities in Southern California, Indigo, which is a 138-megawatt peaking facility located in Palm Springs, and Larkspur, which is a 94-megawatt peaker in San Diego County. These facilities were approved under California's emergency siting procedures during the 2001 energy crisis. And I believe Larkspur was the first and Indigo was the third. and both are currently operating under pre-AB 32 contract. As peaking facilities, wildfire plants are very flexible and can provide fast starting capability, energy, and capacity to respond to market demands. The facilities are needed to help ensure reliability in Southern California, particularly in light of potential future energy constraints in Southern California. Many energy sources in Southern California, like once-through cooling and possibly nuclear, may not be available, and the availability of emission reduction credits will make it difficult to build new sources in Southern California area or in the South Coast Basin. There will be an increasing need for conventional sources like wildflower to support the growing number of intermittent sources such as wind and solar. However, our facilities are in serious jeopardy. They are operating under a long-term pre-AB 32 contract with a power marketer, third-party off-taker, that does not address greenhouse gas costs. At the time, this type of contract, long-term contract, was strongly encouraged during the energy crisis to help stabilize California's power costs. We understand that the ARB's preferred method was for both parties to get together and try to renegotiate such contracts, and that seems to be working for the entities that have contracts with CPUC jurisdiction. But our counterparty is not subject to the CPUC's jurisdiction, and despite our numerous attempts to renegotiate the contract, our counterparty is simply unwilling to accept any responsibility for greenhouse gas costs. They have no incentive to renegotiate the contract, and instead have incentive to run our facilities even more than they normally would in our peaking capacity. And they've indicated that will be the case starting in 2013. So we're here today to ask the board's assistance, which my attorney, Brian Bearing, will detail in further comments.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Brian Bearing with the law firm Ellison, Schneider & Harris, and I'm here today to speak on behalf of Wildflower Energy. The board previously addressed this issue in the context of Resolution 1233 back in September, and that resolution did a couple of things. It directed staff to propose regulatory amendments to bring back to the board in mid-2013 that would essentially provide for some sort of transition assistance for these contracts. We certainly very much appreciate that direction by the board, but what we're hoping today is that the board could provide a little bit more clarity on that direction, specifically relating to three issues that we would have with the existing direction that the board's provided. The first issue is about the timing. If the resolution or if the regulatory amendments come out in mid-2013, that means that any free allocation or transition assistance really wouldn't take place until 2014. And in the meantime, you know, we will need to assume that we wouldn't be receiving any sort of transition assistance. We'll need to move forward with procuring allowances. That's going to expose the projects to a significant cost and really could undermine their viability. The second issue is that in speaking with staff about what they're thinking with the transition assistance, that they would propose something along the lines of a transition assistance that would basically be based on a assumed efficiency rate. And the concern there is that our projects, as Mr. Shepard mentioned, are peaking facilities. And as peaking facilities, they have a higher heat rate because they're, you know, they start faster, they're designed to respond to market needs and basically fill in demand on a short-term basis. And because they have a higher heat rate, if any transition assistance was based on a lower heat rate, it would really leave a significant portion of our compliance obligation unsatisfied. The third concern is that the board resolution directs the staff to work with the Public Utilities Commission, and while you know, we agree with that, and there's certainly been some progress at the Public Utilities Commission, we really believe that the California ISO is the appropriate entity for staff to be working with, in part because they're the ones that have direct jurisdiction over the power marketer that we have a contract with, and really have a better sense, I think, of the potential for you know, market manipulation in this case. So we've detailed these suggestions in the context of a suggested board resolution, which we provided in a letter, and I've also brought copies of that letter if that would be helpful. So we'd be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you. I appreciate the issue. Before I recognize anybody else, I just want to say we will respond to your letter,
Thank you,
Chair. And we'll continue to work this issue, but we do understand that it's an issue. Mr. Leverage.
wondered if staff wants to make any initial comments. When they actually came to my office, and their concerns seemed reasonable to me, and so I wanted to know if you can give any at least initial
quick response.
So we are, the gentleman has said, working through this, and the board has directed us to handle the legacy contracts. We will be having, we will be starting workshops next year to start looking at how to handle them. We are talking with CAISO, and we are aware of the unique role that peaker plants play in the grid reliability within California, and those are things that we're going to be considering, as well as the specific situations that each of these parties are in as we work through these legacy contracts.
I would just underscore that the relationship that we've developed with the California Independent System Operator is close and intense, and we are talking to them on a very regular basis about all the issues relating to the electricity markets, because everything about this program has a relationship to the markets, and we want to make sure that everything we're doing is coordinated. Ms. Berg.
Thank you. I would also like to encourage staff to look at who controls what here. Enforcement is critical, but if you have plants that were owned by a party who sold it to another party who has a contract that has all of the say as to how that plant runs, I'm not sure the operator is the person we should be regulating here. So I think there is a set of circumstances, and I would really appreciate if legal would take a look at if we aren't sandwiching an entity or a group of people that truly do not have the ability to, of their own, they don't have control of their own destiny, and I'm really concerned about that.
Okay. Any other comments or questions on this one? If not, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank
we hope to be back with you soon, and we'll get this resolved. Okay, so back to the more general prospects for the coming year and what we've done to date. I just wanted mention a couple of things. The first was I'd like to go back to that slide that showed the various state plans and reports that are being issued in the coming year, because it's pretty dramatic, actually. Can you put slide 13 back up, whoever's in control of this? Yes. Thank you. So obviously the multiplicity of these items leads to several questions, like, are these coordinated? Does anybody have a sort of an overarching strategy for these things? And the answer is a little bit better than you might think. All of these reports and documents are required by one or another statutes or directives that we're involved in, but actually the scoping plan is in a pretty good position to integrate all of them in one place. And the good news is that the Governor's Office of Planning and Research has specifically asked us to do this. That is, they're tracking what we're doing. They are interested in having us roll up these other items into the plan. And so I'm actually quite optimistic that for maybe the first time ever, at least the first time that I can recall, the state will, in fact, have in one place the air and transportation and energy strategies, at least the basics of what we're doing, as well as the relationship with local, regional land use planning, not necessarily one gigantic master plan. I think that would be probably counterproductive, because these things are developed for different audiences and different purposes, but at least one place that a person could go to that will track all of the other plans and sort of parallel them as well. And Obviously, this is something that hasn't been done before. It's a challenge for our staff. It's also a tribute, I think, to ARB that people think we can do this. And we're going to be getting help as well from other agencies, of course. But still, it's a pretty remarkable undertaking. So while this may not be kind of at the top of anybody's press campaigns as they talk about AB 32, it's just, I think, a pretty remarkable element to come out. My only regret about this is that, scoping plan just doesn't sound all that exciting. It's not like the thing that everybody's going to get excited about. Oh boy, a scoping plan. But the reality is that the last scoping plan that we did, which led to where we are now, had an enormous impact. And I think this one, if we do it right, could be even more influential in kind of subtle ways. Not that we get to tell everybody else what to do, but just that we get to actually figure out how these different policies could work together. So I just wanted to really underscore that item, especially for those who've been involved in multiple planning efforts over the years, which many of our board members have. I hope that we'll be able to bring back some interesting milestones. Yes, Mayor Leverett.
Well, if I just could add a couple of sentences to the chairman's comments. This should not simply be a technical document that declares success and it fills up a series of pages and says we've integrated it and go home. It seems to me, I saw the scoping plan as one of the most important things the state has done, and somehow this update, I think, needs to have a similar kind of status. This is not just a technical document, but a document that's trying to define the future choices for the state. So the success of this is not that it puts everything together, but the success of it is the story that it tells.
Right. Our expectation is that both in the development of the plan over the next year and after the publication, it'll drive the discussion and inspire and motivate and direct action in all these areas.
Yeah. So just another comment from me, since everybody else seems to be quiet today, is going back to the issue of what's next on our existing programs. As I think we kind of skated over this gently, there's a lot of work left to be done on the cap and trade rule. And there are going to be multiple points in the coming year where we're going to be looking at specific items. The comment here today just illustrated one issue that staff has to grapple with over the course of this first compliance period, as well as looking ahead to the next stages of the program. And the efforts to make sure that the revenues that are coming in both from the cap and trade program and from Prop 39, which also covers somewhat similar territory and needs to be also integrated in the planning, are going to consume a lot of our staff time and effort over the coming year. Yes.
Well, and as we're looking at that too, the research is going to be critical, because as we're encouraging behavioral changes and also giving choices, we really need to spend these dollars wisely to be sending signals to the citizens of the state of California as to their choices and benefits for those choices. So that adds another element. So there is, once again, a lot of work to be done. It's an exciting time.
Just in case anyone thought that they could take a quiet break for the next year, I want to put you on notice. All right. Does anybody else have anything they'd like to ask or add? Okay. If not, thank you very much. Appreciate the update. We are going to be moving next to the presentation of the Hagenschmidt Clean Air Awards. But before we do that, I wanted to take this moment, because we have a resolution, which the board members have seen, recognizing Tom Caquette on his retirement. And I spoke about Linda Murchison earlier and mentioned that there was a wave of retirements. Well, at the head of that wave, or the crest of the wave, or whatever, is our longtime and very, highly prized head of our mobile source program, Deputy Executive Officer Tom Caquette. And since I frequently take credit for having been part of recruiting him to the Air Resources Board, it's now my my obligation to also be part of his departure from us at the end of this month. We are noting Tom's contributions, his substantive contributions to air quality. We will be doing that in a few minutes. But we also have a resolution from the board, which will be presented to him in a nicer version with a seal on it and in a frame suitable for hanging in his study or wherever he chooses to, that I thought would be good to read and have the board formally endorse. So I'm going to do that right now. This is Board Resolution 12-52. Whereas Mr. Thomas Arthur Caquette is retiring from public service after a distinguished 30-year career with the Air Resources Board, faithfully serving 5 governors, 8 chairs, and 4 executive officers. Whereas Tom started his career as a, quote, real rocket scientist, unquote, at Rocketdyne, and then worked for 8 years for the United States Environmental Protection Agency in their motor vehicle emissions laboratory in Ann Arbor, Michigan, before joining the Air Resources Board in 1982 as a new program consultant and quickly rising to his current position as Chief Deputy Executive Officer in 1987. Whereas Tom is leaving an extraordinary legacy of establishing precedent-setting emission standards for all types of mobile sources that are technically and economically feasible, and has effectively communicated these findings in a variety of forums, including board meetings, and an untold number of public workshops, legislative hearings, and regulatory hearings at the state, federal, and international level. Whereas Tom's accomplishments include the implementation of many first-in-the-world clean air programs, such as the first low-emission vehicle and zero-emission vehicle regulations, the nation's first hydrogen fueling network, the invention of onboard diagnostic systems, and the first exhaust and evaporative standards for small engines. And he will tell you that he didn't do all this by himself, and that's true, but nevertheless, he was the person in charge when all of these things happened and played a very significant role. That's not in the text. I'm just editorializing here. Whereas Tom's crowning achievement was to usher in the world's first greenhouse gas standards for passenger vehicles in 2004, which President Obama then adopted nationally. Then Tom did it again in 2012, negotiating with federal agencies, automotive manufacturers, and others to adopt the second phase of greenhouse gas standards for passenger vehicles that became the template for the 2012 final federal regulations establishing a new 54.5 mile per gallon national fuel economy standard for 2025 passenger cars and light trucks. Whereas Tom's efforts to develop and improve the smog check program are legendary, particularly considering that for many years he drove a diesel Volkswagen Rabbit, which coincidentally was exempted from the program. Whereas Tom wisely recognized that regulations alone are not always the best solution for reducing air pollution, and therefore championed and guided the investment of over $1 billion of incentive funds that have been used to dramatically accelerate the cleanup of diesel engines and advance the use of clean fuel vehicles. Whereas Tom's vision turned ARB's Hagenschmidt Laboratory in El Monte into a world-class research center that has generated a tremendous amount of first-of-its-kind policy-relevant data critical to demonstrating technical and economic feasibility of new air quality and greenhouse gas regulations, and has further enhanced ARB's excellent scientific reputation. Whereas Tom's life work clearly reflects his unique and expert ability to bridge the seemingly irreconcilable worlds of highly technical information with a policy setting in a way that pushes innovation drives the development of new technologies, resulting in both substantial public health benefits and lower consumer costs. Whereas Tom's easygoing demeanor and pragmatic problem-solving approach earned him the utmost respect from the board and staff, regulated industry, environmental advocates, and the air pollution control community, but particularly the collective staff of the Mobile Source Operations Division, Monitoring and Laboratory Division, and Mobile Source Control Divisions that he effectively led for so many years. And whereas Tom's legacy is embodied in the vastly superior motor vehicles on the road today, as well as the substantial improvements yet to come, ARB's enhanced scientific credibility, the clean transportation policies around the world that carry California's imprint, the talented staff and managers that have developed under his mentoring, and the improved public health and welfare of every Californian resulting from improved air quality. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the board gives tribute to Mr. Thomas Arthur Caquette for his contribution to the people of California and extends a heartfelt thank you for his accomplishments and the significant role he played in shaping ARB into the world leader in clean transportation. Be it further resolved that the board directs Tom to faithfully and thoroughly enjoy his retirement with his wife Helen and his children Laura and David, while continuing to find significant pleasure in poker nights, fine wine, sushi, and from time to time a PB&J sandwich. Executed at Los Angeles, California on this 6th day of December 2012, may I ask your unanimous consent for this resolution? Yes, thank you. All right. You are allowed 3 minutes of response time, if you would like. Yes, please.
Well, thank you very much. That was a very impressive executive order for me, and I greatly appreciate it, and I'll find a place on the wall for it. And I greatly appreciate it. The thing I wanted to say was that working for this board has been an honor. It's been something that's been made my life pleasurable. In addition, you have an unbelievable staff of people. I've been lucky to have Patty working for me and making my life so much easier in these last few years. And it's that sort of team spirit that I think is all the way through the board that pull off things like the AB 32 cap and trade program. I mean, it's just when I first heard about that, this is never going to work, you know. This is so much more complicated than the Advanced Clean Car Program, and it was, but they pulled it off like it was nothing. And so I think, you know, it's really proud to be associated with that for so many years, and I certainly know that you're proud to be associated with the staff and the team here that supports the goal of clean air and climate improvement for the future. I do want to say one thing about that diesel rabbit, though. Just so you know that there's always balance here, that while I didn't have to take that to smog check, Dr. Bombs and I, who drive diesels today, we have to go when the car's 2 years old, and you only have to go when the car's 6 years old. So I'm atoning for the sins here of having that little puffer from the past. But other than that note, I again thank you very much, and it's been a great honor to be working for the board.
Thank you, Tom. Tom has had to endure, and he's done it with very good grace, a whole series of events, and it's not over yet. He's not leaving until the end of the month, and the staff in Sacramento haven't had their chance to wish him a farewell yet either. So this is just going to continue rolling forward, Tom. We're not done with you yet. Not to mention what happens after you retire, because we know where you live, and we know how to find you. Yeah, exactly. But we are left one of the things that isn't really mentioned in the resolution, but that I think maybe those of us who've been following, you know, what goes on in some of the corporate boardrooms these days ought to take note of the fact that one of the things that's been a hallmark of ARB I think, in recent years is the care and effort that's gone into managing transitions, that knowing that we were going to be experiencing demographic change as people get older and retire, our senior staff has done a really phenomenal job of teaching, training, cultivating, exposing the talent that we have. And so Tom's departure leaves behind a number of extraordinary people whose careers he helped to shape and mentor. Obviously, his successor, Alberto Ayala, who's extremely well positioned to come in and take the program on to the next steps, but also I know people like Eric White, who's right behind him, and Edie Chang is another, and there are Bob Cross, of course, from El Monte, and Annette Hebert, and all the people that have worked with him and have been part of the same experience. So it's not just that they all shared in the accomplishments, which they did, it's also that they really are all ready to carry on. And I think that speaks extremely well of the organization and of Tom's leadership as well. Okay, this is a big day for recognizing people, and I guess that's a good thing at the end of the year. But this is the board meeting at which we're going to be presenting the Hagenschmidt Clean Air Awards, and we have a slide presentation that goes with this. And I guess since we didn't rehearse this, I'm just going to read the text, and the slides will be there. Okay.
I'm not used to doing this.
Yeah. You know? Somebody else usually does it, but okay, I'll do it. So the last item on our agenda is the ARB's Hagenschmidt Clean Air Awards. So it's a privilege to present this annual award where we recognize today's leaders in air pollution research, technology, and policy. The Hagenschmidt Clean Air Awards are made in honor of the late Professor R.E.J. Hagenschmidt and his important contributions to air pollution science and the significance of his career as ARB's first chairman. Today's presentation will highlight the history of the award program and the accomplishments of the 2012 award recipients. Next slide. Ari Hagenschmidt, a native of the Netherlands, was a biochemistry professor at the University of at the California Institute of Technology, Caltech, in Pasadena for 16 years before beginning his air pollution research in 1948. It was his research that found that most of California's smog resulted from photochemistry when exhaust from motor vehicles and industrial facilities react with sunlight to create ozone. This breakthrough provided the scientific foundation for the development of California's and the nation's air pollution control programs. Leaving his plant studies behind, he continued working in the field of air pollution research and control, taking the smog problem in LA head on and becoming ARB's first chairman in 1968. In 1973, in recognition of his contributions, Dr. Hagenschmidt received the National Medal of Science, this country's highest scientific honor. Dr. Hagenschmidt passed away 35 years ago, but his legacy lives on. I actually had the opportunity to meet Dr. Hagenschmidt on a couple of different occasions. He was a very strong-minded individual and somebody who always was pushing for what he believed was right. He also had the license plate ARB1 on his car, which I've envied. I don't know what happened to it, but it was quite distinctive that he drove around with that on his car. Since 2001, the Air Resources Board has sponsored the Hagenschmidt Clean Air Awards, and over the last 11 years, 31 distinguished people have received the award. And I have, too. I'm pleased to announce the three recipients of the 2012 Hagenschmidt Clean Air Award. I'm going to read the information about these folks, and then we'll present them with their actual awards at the end. So perhaps not surprisingly, in light of all that we've said about him, the first recipient of the award today is Tom Caquette for his work in the area of environmental policy. The next is Andrea Rico for her work in the area of public education. and then Dr. Ron Loveridge for his work in the area of environmental policy. After I highlight their accomplishments, they'll come up to the podium and receive their awards. Although Andrea Rico is not able to be with us today, she contacted me in the early hours of this morning. She was taken sick on her way back in the middle of the night from an asthma talk that she was giving in San Francisco, and didn't, her plane was canceled, which didn't make it any better, you know, 4 hours of sitting at the airport. So I hope we'll have a chance to recognize her in person at a later board meeting, but we're going to go ahead and talk about her anyway. I said we would promise to say nice things in her absence. So as you've heard at the beginning of the meeting, or just a little bit ago, Tom has been with the ARB since 1982 and has served as its chief deputy executive officer, managing some of the board's key programs, ranging from motor vehicle emissions controls to the air monitoring and laboratory operations. He's been involved in many areas of air pollution control since the 1970s, but he's most widely recognized for his guidance and perseverance in mobile source control regulations, many that have influenced national and international policies. His most recent contributions, of course, are the low-emission vehicle and zero-emission vehicle regulations, along with the incentive programs that have become so embedded in the framework of our operations. In 1993, he was instrumental in developing the new heavy-duty vehicle standards, leading to dramatic reductions in diesel particulate, sulfur oxides, and nitrogen oxides. And this program he has held together throughout the past two decades, resulting in new developments in fuels, engine technologies, and in unprecedented levels of industry and government collaboration. Under Tom's leadership, the low-emission vehicle program, which was first adopted in 1990, paved the way for numerous clean air vehicle technologies. And Tom has now worked not just once but twice with federal agencies to expand California's light-duty vehicle programs to the national level. Thanks to these advanced clean cars programs, new vehicles in 2025 will be emitting 75% less smog-forming pollution than they do today, and that's after previous waves of reductions in emissions, which brings us to the point where it's not true that the air coming out of most cars is cleaner than what goes in, but it's close to being true, very close to being true. Carrying on from the work that he began in inspection and maintenance programs at USEPA, Tom has been fundamental in reforming that program. And it's one that still, although most people are barely aware of its existence, at least if you drive newer cars, the fact is it still is responsible for some of the largest emissions reductions in California. And through his leadership and persistence in working with the Bureau of Automotive Repair and the legislature, new smog check testing procedures are set to roll out next year, 2013, that will continue to ensure an estimated 70 tons of pollutants per day are reduced, while saving consumers an estimated $64 million annually. Tom not only understands the political, economic, and technological barriers and possibilities in air pollution control, he really has a knack for working with all stakeholders in a very productive way. He's brought clarity to air quality issues in a broad range of forums. Throughout his career as Chief Deputy Executive Officer, he's dedicated his time openly to sharing his knowledge and mentoring staff, assuring the legacy of highly qualified, committed professionals who will carry on his work. So although he's retiring from the board this year, his work and his passion to improve California's air will continue to be a legacy, and we thank him for his work. The next person that will be receiving the award, Andrea Rico, as I mentioned, is not able to be here today. Many of you, however, know Andrea or have met her on other occasions. She is a professor of clinical and preventive medicine at the Keck School of Medicine at the University of Southern California, as well as director of the Community Outreach and Education Program of the Southern California Environmental Health Sciences Center, a partnership between USC and UCLA, something that many people don't think can be done, but she has done it. She also directs the Community Outreach and Translation Corps of the USC-UCLA Children's Environmental Health Center, funded by the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences and US EPA. Her current work involves environmental justice topics surrounding public health impacts from goods movement in the ports of Long Beach and Los Angeles. She served on US EPA's National Environmental Justice Committee's Working Group on Ports and Goods Movement, the Governor of California's Cabinet-Level Goods Movement Action Plan, and the Southern California Association of Governments Goods Movement Task Force, helping to formulate more sustainable transportation and goods movement policies. She's also a founder of the Impact Project, a nationwide community and academic partnership focused on reducing the health impacts of international trade. She's widely regarded as an inspiration to the youth and community members she serves and for empowering community-based organizations to educate their communities and local policymakers about the health effects of air pollution and more effectively advocate for cleaner air and better land use decision-making. Ms. Rico has been recognized by South Coast AQMD with an Environmental Stewardship Award, by Physicians for Social Responsibility with an Environmental Health Champion Award, and by the nonprofit Coalition for Clean Air with an Environmental Leadership Award for her longtime efforts to help the public understand the science of air pollution's public health impacts. We are honored to add the Hagenschmidt Clean Air Award to this list, and we thank her for her dedication to the community and for improving California's clean air legacy. So we are going to make sure she gets that award presented to her. And finally, our last award goes to our own Dr. Ronald Loveridge. We always call him mayor, but he actually could be, we could call him doctor too. He has served on the Air Resources Board for 8 years and has been mayor of Riverside since 1994, serving on the South Coast Air Quality Management District's Governing Board since 1995. He's also an associate professor in political science at the University of California, Riverside, where he has taught since 1965. His accomplishments as mayor are legion, including implementing a strategic action plan to make Riverside a model clean air city in 2002. And in 2005, Riverside was recognized with an award by the South Coast Air Quality Management District as a model clean air community. Also in 2005, Mayor Loveridge appointed a clean and green task force for the city. And in 2007, this task force, with the mayor's endorsement, put forth a sustainable Riverside policy, detailing 8 main directives, including urban forestry, solar initiatives, alternative transportation modes, green building efforts, and water and air quality improvements. In 2009, Riverside was officially designated as the first Emerald City by the California Department of Conservation. As an ARB board member, he's been a longstanding champion of plug-in electric vehicles and community electric vehicle readiness. He's been instrumental in achieving emissions reductions from rail yards in the South Coast and maintaining the integrity of the 2005 rail yard agreement through his membership on the board. He's also frequently served as the board's resident expert on local government issues. Dr. Loveridge was president of the League of California Cities, a member of the Regional Council of the Southern California Association of Governments, and has been honored by the American Lung Association for his leadership in protecting public health from air pollution. He has been recently recognized by the Southern California Association of Governments for his material and significant contributions to regional transportation, housing, land use, and environmental planning. Ron Loveridge has the intellectual integrity of a true leader. His professional and approachable demeanor is irreplaceable and is going to be missed on this board, but it's not going to be happening just yet. I'm very happy to say he will be able to continue to serve for a while longer until a successor is appointed. And so we're not saying goodbye to him just yet. I do want to add, though, that he is stepping down from his post as mayor, relinquishing the gavel to a successor who seems to be quite capable also of carrying on and going back to teaching at UC Riverside. But I had the opportunity to listen to some of his fellow citizens recognize him a couple of nights ago at the Riverside City Council meeting. And if you think that he's been spending all of his time on all of those air quality and environmental initiatives that I mentioned, you would be wrong, because in addition to that, he has been apparently back in Riverside playing a very significant role in human relations, in youth development, in model programs for the deaf, in work with senior citizens, in arts awareness programs, not to mention being a leader in the Sister Cities movement, which seems to have sent him to many corners of the globe and gotten Riverside on the map as a leading international city as well. So this is not a person who has limited his activities to one issue area, but we are very blessed that he has chosen to spend so much of his time with us on the Air Resources Board. So I'd like to now call the winners up to get their awards and have a photo with the board. We can do that up here. And we could have public testimony, but why would we do that? We're not. Nobody's going to object, as far as I know. So, okay. I think the record is closed on this item, and I'm going to call Tom up, and Ron is here. we will take a photo.
Like a piece of glass. Except, right. You have Tom. Yours was damaged in shipping.
Okay.
So we can take a picture.
But we have another one.
You have a piece of glass that you can hold on to.
And you can speak here. And you're allowed for Tom to speak in there. And you have to speak directly.
Tom, it's my great pleasure to present to you the Hagenschmidt Award for Outstanding Contributions to Environmental Policy. There you go. And where's our photographer? Here. There we go. Okay, there we go. Thank you.
Well, again, I'm just really honored to get this, and it's humbling to be part of this group of incredibly great people that have received this award, including Dr. Leverage, and it'll be something that I'll be looking at for many days, or probably the rest of my life, sitting on the credenza somewhere, and it's really appreciated. And thank you so much, Mary. Thanks for hiring me too. That was that was probably the necessary prerequisite to
That's
this.
True. That's true. We had to lure you out here. I think the weather was the main thing, as I recall at the time.
That was something to do with it.
Anyway, you got to stay around. So, all right, and we have also a photo for Ron here. I've already told you a lot about Ron Leverage, so I'm not going to say much more, but the Hagenschmidt Award is obviously something that means a lot to ARB and people who follow the history of air quality. So I hope this will take its place among your many other awards. Let's do a group photo if we can. Get everybody here. Move this thing away. Get the board members to stand up. Or should we go down in front? Better. Let's go down in front. Okay.
You want me to make a brief comment?
Sure. Please do. Okay. Let's do it.
Well, first, I joined Tom and recognizing who is on this list and joining those being recognized today. Tom must have the same feeling. You're not only looking forward, but you're also looking back. And I would make just a couple personal comments. I remember growing up in the Bay Area and doing graduate work there was a disc jockey, which talked about air quality in Southern California, and he had a named Don Sherwood, and he had a can of clean air that he was on occasion would send down Southern California, and I thought that was kind of amusing. I remember coming down to be interviewed in the wintertime at UC Riverside, and when I went back up, someone said, the air is not good down in Southern California, not good in the inland area, and I said, it didn't seem too bad to me at the wintertime. And then I remember with my wife, we, after turning in her dissertation the last day, you could do that at Stanford, we packed what we had in our car and drove down and came to the Cajon Pass. And we looked at each other and said, my God, where's that? And I literally, my first day on the UCR campus, I went up to the air pollution lab, talked to a fellow named John Middleton, who was became the kind of first head of smog control at the federal level, and asked Middleton, what is this stuff, and how do people take it? And I was interested, particularly as a political scientist, in terms of the public and the community accepting what was something I didn't realize quite what was there. I remember one particular comment later on from attending a conference where Ari Hagenschmidt was speaking, and someone was asking, how does a world-class scientist decide decisions on the Air Resources Board? And I still remember his answer, because he kind of smiled and said he listens very carefully to what people say, and then when he decides the pain is real, he stops. And I thought that that was his instructions that he was giving by way of explanation. I did a little research on what was the Clean Air Acts and what and how California got the exemption. We did. It was Senator George Murphy introduced it in the Senate, but the critical action was in the House, and this had to go through the Commerce Committee, which John Dingell was a long time and powerful chair of this House Commerce Committee, and there was an effort where the Southern California particularly, but Northern California also sort of rallied. It was Republicans and Democrats. It was a state rally that, in effect, took this to the House floor, and Dingell was turned back, and the California exception was included. I remember talking to John Dingell, and he said he hoped California would be cut off and float out in the Pacific Ocean. He was not happy by losing to that vote that day. But I became interested in the policy process, not so much the public health, but the policy process. And I, after elected as mayor and as council member, I thought our city needed to be, since we were a downwind place, we needed to be a leader in Southern California in terms of being green and being a leader in air quality measures. And so I take some pride as I leave is that we're one of, I think, the greenest cities and California. We competed with Santa Monica and Jersey City and ourselves in a contest by the Chamber and Siemens last year. Santa Monica edged us out, but we regard ourselves as competitive. And in the air quality area, Barry Wallerstein, who's sitting in the back, will know I've been a champion of using AB 2766. Not simply handing it to staff to fill in budget holes, but rather to see it as a policy opportunity for electeds. And I think we've taken a number of major steps, from transit's free for college students. We've reduced it for seniors. We last month we received the title of having the greenest public fleet in the country. We've worked very hard to use AB 27 in ways that to reduce air pollution. But I think the start of all this, maybe a way of getting me out of a field and worrying about place, was that initial response to air quality, which in 1965 there were 200 first-stage smog alerts. There were 65 second-stage It was a wall that you not only saw but felt, and it did seem to me that one had an obligation to change what one found. So I am honored to be a part of this award, and I've been also honored to serve on the Air Quality Board locally and the state, and one hopes one's helped move the ball down the field. But thank you to all those who have been involved in this effort. Life and air is much better here in Southern California in 2012 than when I came in 1965.
Yeah.
It's not his award.
In my enthusiasm, I neglected to recognize that we are actually in a formal meeting here. So we will move now to the public comment period. We have two people who have signed up to testify. So let's begin with Bill Davis. Mr. Davis, are you here? There you go. Okay. Good. And then Sean Edgar is our other witness, in again 3 minutes.
I've heard that before somewhere. Good morning, Chairman Nichols and members of the board. Welcome to what we normally call sunny Southern California. The clouds will probably be gone by the time you guys leave for lunch. Please accept our best wishes for the holiday season and for the coming new year. Mrs. Reardon, also please accept our sincere condolences for the loss of your husband. I'm Bill Davis. I'm now the editor of the Southern California Contractors Association and California Construction Trucking Association publications, and I'm an active member of the Construction Industry Air Quality Coalition. I'm here today in my role as reporter to report to you a major problem that's emerging in the portable engine registration program. CIAC has a special standing to discuss issues related to the PERP, as we were the organization that got the enabling legislation passed in Sacramento in the mid-90s, and we've been an active partner in working with the Air Resources Board in developing the original regulation and its many subsequent amendments. We needed the PERP to help the construction industry cope with the crazy quilt of conflicting local air district regulation of this category of diesel and large spark ignition engine equipment. And the legislature heard our plea in the 90s. We're here today to report that the local air districts are back in the business of setting their own, often conflicting, regulations on our equipment. This problem surfaced nearly 2 years ago in San Diego and is now spreading. We're getting reports of new requirements in the South Coast and San Joaquin. We're sure that more will follow. And our industry, as you all know, has suffered rather severely during the Great Recession. I'm happy to report that this year our industry is up about 7% from where it's been, which is good news. That 7% brings us from a decline of 50% to a decline of 43%. So we're still in trouble. And in July of this year, all the construction activity you're seeing on the highways is going to be reduced by roughly 50% as Caltrans budget gets cut by that amount. The problem that we brought this problem with the local air districts to your staff and the PERP unit. We want to particularly commend Mike Tolstrup for his help. He was particularly helpful in arranging a series of meetings with the California Air Pollution Control Officer Association. But after a year and a half of meetings with CAPCOA, I'm sorry to say that we have reached impasse and been met with intransigence and indifference. We have not gone to these meetings alone. CAIAC has built a coalition of at least 10 other industries who are impacted by the local district approach to PERP. Our coalition is prepared to continue the effort to return PERP to its core mission of adequate regulation of this equipment on a statewide basis, but not a confusing collection of conflicting rules. We're here today to ask the board to appoint a special subcommittee to investigate this issue, get input from your staff, from industry and CAPCOA on possible solutions, and if necessary, draft additional amendments to the program to strengthen the statewide approach that's worked so well for the past 15 plus years. Thank you.
Thank you. We can't take action on this item today, I believe, because it's not a noticed agenda item.
That's
but
right.
I think we can direct staff to look into this and to report back to us.
What we'd like to do is give you a report about the work we've done to date, and then come up with some ideas about next steps.
All right, and if appropriate, we certainly would consider the committee approach, but we'd like to know a little bit more about what's going on.
Absolutely appropriate, and we're happy to also participate in any future activities.
Great. All right. Well, the next step will be then for the staff to report back to us, which hopefully will happen before the next board meeting.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Okay, Mr. Edgar.
Good morning, Chair Nichols and board members. Sean Edgar, I'm the director of cleanfleets.net, and in my 12 years appearing in front of the board, it's the first time I've seen Tom Kiquette actually blush. So well wishes to you, Tom. Thanks for working through many of the issues. I've been fortunate primarily on behalf of fleet associations over the last 12 years to work on implementing the diesel risk reduction plan. We've had a lot of issues that Tom and I have worked through, and Eric and the rest of the staff, and I'm sure Dr. Ayala will carry on a fine tradition. Looking forward to working with him. I just have two brief items to share with you. Both relate to public outreach. So I'm pleased to report that under contract ARB, cleanfleets.net has been out doing training on truck and bus rule, primarily in rural counties throughout California. So to date, we've been fortunate to educate about 3,000 fleet owners in about 50 counties throughout California. And we're proceeding also in 5 western states as part of the board's effort to make sure that fleets that are impacted by the truck and bus rule know that, so I wanted to report some success there. And we've been particularly successful in getting to small fleets, conducting some bilingual training, and also conducting trainings in the border zone. So we've had several bilingual sessions in the border zone, including we have one next week on December 11th. And actually, we may ask Dr. Ayala to come down and help with his bilingual skills there, so we might find another opportunity for his many talents to come help us on outreach. So we've made a lot of progress on outreach. There's one item is a little time sensitive I wanted to bring to your attention relating to the TRU or Transportation Refrigeration Unit. Staff recently released a guidance document on about November 15th that has some deadlines here at the end of the month. And we had several stakeholders that attended our training say, we're more than happy to deal with this issue and I won't bore you with all the minutiae except to say this relates to electric standby. And so what that means is folks that have invested in infrastructure to be able to plug in units when they're at a central facility are being asked to do more, and those folks that have communicated with us as part of our training have said they're happy to do more. The only challenge is over the next 30 days they're being asked to make some very big strides relative to electronics being installed on those vehicles. So they're willing to do it. It just seems that the timing wasn't favorable relative to the board amendments of 2011 being noticed and stakeholders being informed. So that was just one item that we'd ask your staff to just, we've communicated with SSD, Stationary Source Division, on the issue, and we'd just like a little bit of perhaps direction to do some revisions and some additional items that staff is amenable to. As an example, purchase orders by the end of the month would satisfy a requirement, and also there was staff was offering to do a four-month lead time similar to the truck rule where an operator would have 4 months lead time. Unfortunately, with the timing of the advisory coming out in the November 15th time frame, it doesn't allow that 4 months. So some direction or understanding with staff that we'd like to work with just to make sure that the affected fleets who just got notice would be able to have some adequate time. And that's my singular request for today, but staying within the tradition of my 3 minutes, which are just about up, I just wanted to say thank you so much to Mr. Kiquette and Dr. Loveridge. You inspire me. I also feel very young and old at the same time because I've been in front of the board for 12 years, and when you started at UC Riverside, it was just about the time I was born. So thank you for your contributions over many, many decades.
Thank you. Thank you. And one of the things about being a teacher is that your work product is out there in front of you oftentimes for a long time to come. Staff, have any comment or reaction on the presentation? Yes.
Yeah, this is Richard Corey. I want to follow up Mr. Edgar and staff in terms of the timetable issues that he brought and really work through, have a clear understanding, see what some options are. So we'll evaluate that.
This education program that we're doing with the truckers on these rules is incredibly important. So definitely don't want any glitches there.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. Any further comments? I see no one else has signed up to speak. Then, with no objection, we will be adjourned. Thank you, everybody. Happy holidays.